I just keep thinking of this being like Democrats' high stakes healthcare gambit, just putting every single thing they want to do into one package where they can barely lose any votes to pass it. And it's sort of like this high wire healthcare act.
I was thinking about this earlier and I was like, okay, it's totally Bernie in his loud megaphone versus Pelosi and her velvet laced iron fist.
Oh, there you go.
I'm Rachel Bade. This is Playbook Deep Dive. As the Democrats' massive reconciliation bill makes its way through the machine, the one part that's getting the most attention right now? Healthcare. And that's because it's a fight that basically boils down to Nancy Pelosi versus everyone else. Who wins this one? Where do you put your money?
I mean, people don't tend to bet against Pelosi.
Right. Never bet against Nancy.
But Bernie's never had this much actual power. So
anything could happen. Alice Miranda Olstein is a healthcare reporter at Politico.
This really feels like we're getting into a period as intense as 2017 when Republicans kept trying to repeal the Affordable Care Act and their plans kept falling apart.
This time around, though, it's sort of the reverse.
It's easy to be in the minority and yell and scream. It's harder to be in the majority and actually govern. Democrats seem to be a little more have their shit together. Can I say that?
Abso-fucking-lutely. You know, I've been covering the Hill for 10 years, and this is the first time I've ever covered Democrats controlling everything in Washington. Unlike Republicans, who typically duke it out in public all the time, Democrats historically have a tendency to keep their arguments pretty quiet behind the scenes.
I think one of the big overarching themes here is that, you know, when Democrats are in the minority, they are able to paper over a lot of these differences by just saying, we're united against Trump. Trump is trying to repeal the Affordable Care Act. We have to unite to stop them. And now that it's their turn in the majority, all of these divisions and ideological differences about what to actually do on healthcare are really exposed.
But what's interesting for me in all this is we're starting to see the knives come out. Moderates are criticizing progressives about Medicare for All, and leaders are fighting behind closed doors about policies they agreed on for years, or at least they thought they did.
And so part of that is because the people leading this fight on both sides are on the older side and might not have that many more years in power. But a part of it is also just not knowing when Democrats will have the control of the House, Senate, and White House again.
In the House, Pelosi and her fellow leaders are adamant that the party has a responsibility to millions of Americans who are using Obamacare to shore up subsidies while they can. On the other side of the rotunda, Bernie Sanders wants to make Medicare more robust, a step in the direction of Medicare for All. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, who's usually in lockstep with Pelosi, is on Bernie's side, as is the White House.
Something I think, you know, can't be emphasized enough is how many lawmakers up on the Hill, you know, Pelosi top among them, just feel so tied to the Affordable Care Act. It is their baby. And meanwhile, progressives always saw the Affordable Care Act as something they sort of settled for. It was not their preference.
So get the popcorn ready, because on the line, $3.5 trillion, the future of the Affordable Care Act, dueling visions of the Democratic Party. And legislation that may cement the legacies of Bernie Sanders, Nancy Pelosi, and Joe Biden.
I think you have both sides really feeling like this is their chance to make good on what they've been working on for years and years and years.
So, Alice, bring us up to speed on this healthcare fight. We've got these two factions on the left. Those who want to focus on shoring up Obamacare and those who want to move toward a more Medicare for All style system. Can you think of an analogy of these two huge clashes and just tell us about each of them?
Yeah, so progressives are feeling like they've already compromised so much and given up so much to get where we are now. You know, like you said, they began with wanting to really move towards a Medicare for All style system.
I will be fighting for Medicare for All because it's not a white liberal agenda. It's a way to make sure each and every person has health care.
Then they sort of reduce their demands to just lowering the age of Medicare.
At least what we should do is lower the eligibility age for Medicare from 65 to 55 and cover all of the children in this country.
So that more people can enroll. And then they reduce that to just having more Medicare benefits for people.
Medicare works, but after 55 years, it needs some updates.
And now even that is getting chipped away at because you have leadership in the House led by Speaker Pelosi saying we really have to focus on making the Affordable Care Act what we originally wanted it to be, you know, with the full Medicaid expansion and having it be solid in the face of potential future Republican attacks.
So why don't you just give us a quick rundown of these two ginormous policies on each side that people are pushing?
Sure. So Democrats in their big COVID relief bill passed just 2 years of beefed up Obamacare subsidies, which have made plans cheaper for millions of poor and middle class people. And it was really a big piece of why during the pandemic, even though a bunch of people lost their jobs and lost their employer health insurance, they were able to enroll in these subsidized plans. But that all expires next year. And so Democrats feel a lot of pressure to extend it. And what they really want to do is extend it permanently, make those beefed up subsidies permanent so that a future Republican Congress doesn't have the opportunity to say, we won't extend it anymore next time it runs out. And all of that is very expensive, and it's in competition with these other health priorities in the bill, including what progressives are pushing for primarily, which is adding dental, vision, and hearing benefits to Medicare, obviously, both as a, you know, a policy priority and, you know, the politics of, you know, seniors vote, everyone knows, is a big driver there.
Right. So lay out these two players, like the key players for us, who wants what and what's driving them.
Sure. So, you know, in the House, you have a large number of people in the House Progressive Caucus who are really in line with what Bernie is pushing, saying we can't just keep pouring money into subsidizing private insurance, which is what Obamacare mainly is. And they have more than enough members to block passage of this and other bills. And so it's not an idle threat. And then on the other hand, you have folks who are more in line with Speaker Pelosi in the House, who are, you know, the new Democrats, the more moderate members, who say, you know, we really have to focus on Obamacare. It's just vulnerable. You know, they could lose the majority in the future. Republicans could try to cut it, et cetera.
Yeah, the dynamic between the two is really interesting. I was trying to think about, what do I know about their relationship, Bernie versus Pelosi? Have you heard much about whether they talk at all on this or anything about how they're dealing with this huge disagreement on where to put money, ACA or Medicare?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because it's not just Bernie versus Pelosi. It's Bernie and all of these House progressives who mainly not had open warfare with Pelosi, but once in a while will come out swinging on something. And this is one of those areas. And then over in the Senate, you know, Democrats can't lose a single vote. You have a lot of, you know, we heard over the weekend Bernie and Joe Manchin trading barbs. They're sort of fighting with each other through the Sunday interviews.
He will not have my vote on 3.5, and Chuck knows that. And we've talked about this. We've already put out $5.4 trillion, and we've tried to help Americans in every way we possibly can. And a lot of the help that we put out there is still there, and it's going to run clear until next year.
Your colleague, Joe Manchin, just explicitly told me repeatedly he will not support your $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill. He wants to see something more in the ballpark of $1.5 trillion. Is that acceptable to you?
No, it is absolutely not acceptable to me. I don't think it's acceptable to the president, to the American people, or to the overwhelming majority of the people in the Democratic caucus.
Yeah, Joe Manchin, a moderate from West Virginia, who is obviously pivotal in the Senate. They need his vote. It'll be interesting to see, you know, where he comes down on this. I definitely bet money that he's going to be in more in the Pelosi category than the Bernie one on this, but we'll have to see on that. Specifically on players, though, you know, you talked at the beginning about, you know, the general wisdom or the conventional wisdom in Washington is like, don't bet against Nancy Pelosi. It's interesting you bring that up because, you know, I've covered her for, you know, 10 years, and she's been sort of the leader of the party for so long. She's so used to getting her way. And it's just really interesting to see her having to sort of fight against a person who just a few years ago was considered a gadfly in the Senate. Obviously, you know, Bernie Sanders has He has this enormous power on the outside of the Hill, you know, this enormous progressive following around the country from his run for president. And seeing these two people go up against each other, it's not something we often see. It'll be interesting to see how that specifically plays out. You mentioned other players, like other progressives. Where's the White House on this? And how much do you think that they are going to be sort of playing umpire here between these two sides?
Well, it was really interesting to see that when the House released their version of the pieces of this legislation, the White House did not give a ringing endorsement to it. They sort of kept their distance, which really caught the eye of a lot of people, myself included. So I think that they are very wary of ticking off the progressives, Bernie and the other progressives. And, you know, they need to hold this whole fragile coalition together. I think one of the big overarching themes here is that, you know, when Democrats are in the minority, they are able to paper over a lot of these differences by just saying, we're united against Trump. Trump is trying to repeal the Affordable Care Act. We have to unite to stop them. And now that it's their turn in the majority, all of these divisions and ideological differences about what to actually do on healthcare are really exposed.
It's interesting, too, because Bernie has another ally, and that is Chuck Schumer, the majority leader of the Senate, who, you know, depending on where he is in terms of his reelection effort, is more moderate or closer to his reelection sense to sort of hew more toward the left and sort of support more progressive ideas. Schumer is fully, our understanding from our reporting, is fully backing Bernie on this right now, which is really interesting because he and Pelosi are often in lockstep, and yet Schumer's the one fighting with Pelosi right now behind the scenes to try to keep this money for expanding, you know, benefits in Medicare. What do you make of that sort of dynamic? And do you think that, you know, traditionally what the Senate wants often is what happens just in terms of Congress? Do you think that's what we'll see play out here? Or where do you sort of think that this ends up going since Schumer is on Bernie's side?
Yeah, I think that it will either be somewhere in the middle or more towards what the Senate wants, just because of the narrow vote margins there. A lot of House Democrats really don't want to have to walk the plank by voting on a bill that is never going to pass the Senate. They have made those complaints. I was listening to some of the committee markups, and lawmakers were complaining, saying, you know, this bill is never going to pass the Senate. What are we doing here? And that was really striking to hear. And yeah, I mean, back to Schumer, that has been a fascinating dynamic to watch. You know, we keep hearing about him having concerns about a primary from the left. He'll, you know, sometimes have events with AOC back in New York. And definitely, it seems like he is very conscious about appealing to progressives as well as just maintaining the barest of majorities in the Senate and potentially expanding that majority in the midterms next year.
In terms of wild cards, there's one other thing we should definitely mention for listeners, and that is there was a secret promise that was apparently made by Chuck Schumer, and it was a promise to Bernie Sanders that he would give him this provision he's been fighting for in terms of expanding benefits for Medicare in order for him to sign off on $3.5 trillion being the number. Obviously, Sanders wanted that larger $6 trillion bill, and he had to set his sights lower at $3.5 trillion, but in return got this promise from Schumer. But clearly, Pelosi didn't make that promise and is now having to deal with sort of promises that were made on the other side of the rotunda. And, you know, that sort of, it seems like will complicate all this. One policy question that I think a lot of people are going to be asking naturally is, why can't they just do both? Why can't they shore up the Affordable Care Act the way that Pelosi wants to, but also expand Medicare to include dental, vision, and hearing for seniors who currently don't have it? Why can't they do both?
So, I mean, that's part of what you said about, you know, progressives originally wanted $6 trillion or more. They settled for $3.5 trillion. And, you know, bringing that down made them have to make a lot of tough choices in the policy space. And a lot of these healthcare, you know, wish list items are really, really expensive, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars. And they don't have enough to do the full version of everything they want. What they're doing, what they're pursuing is you know, partial versions of different things. And so the Medicare benefit expansion is included in the bill. What progressives are mad about is it's just a skimpier benefit for seniors than the very generous version that they wanted. And the dental is going to kick in many years later than they wanted. And so it's a slim down, but it's still in there. And so that's what we're seeing on a lot of these items. Home health is another big one that progressives are mad about, that the funding for that is slashed, but it's still in there in some version. And so I think rather than this piece or that piece getting completely eliminated, they're just trying to chip away to make the math work.
It also seems to be a moving target, right? Because originally the number was $6 trillion, then it was 3.5. And now Joe Manchin, the moderate in the Senate from West Virginia, is saying, you know, maybe he would only support 1.5, which is
right.
Just a shrinking budget. It's like, where do you put the money? And it's just creating more tension.
Mm-hmm. Kyrsten Sinema has also said that she won't vote for 3.5. It needs to be smaller. And I think, you know, they're the most vocal ones. I think others are concerned about that top line number as well. And so if it shrinks anymore, then a lot of these healthcare programs are going to have to get reduced even further, which is going to cause even more fights.
We'll be right back after a message from our sponsor. And we're back. So Congress is ultimately the art of compromise, right? It's not an executive role. These people are not governors running a state or a mayor running a city or even the president. They're going to have to come up with some sort of deal. You started to hit on this a little earlier, but do you think we will see more cliffs where there's going to be a lot of funding for all these programs, but they can't fund them indefinitely? Or do you think the long-term argument will win out, which is the one Pelosi is making, that we need to fund these things indefinitely, even if it means fewer programs and fewer benefits in the short term?
Yeah, I mean, this is an active fight that's going on right now over what strategy is best. And a lot of it depends on whether they think that Democrats will lose the majority in the future. And should those funding deadlines come up again, maybe they won't be in the majority to be able to extend them. It's also coming down to thinking about the different groups getting served by these different programs and which are more vulnerable and at risk. And so you saw the House this week proposing to make the Medicaid expansion in red states permanent because they just felt that Republicans have opposed the Medicaid expansion very openly for the last decade. And so that would be a piece that they would be willing to get rid of should it come up, whereas stripping away benefits from seniors on Medicare is maybe less politically, you know, viable for a future Republican majority. And so some of those considerations are giving Democrats a headache as well.
How much of this is also about legacy mode for both of these two political giants? I mean, Pelosi and Sanders they're not exactly, you know, young spring chickens. They're looking at retirement. They're getting older. How much of that do you think is factoring in to what we're seeing in terms of this clash?
I think it's a huge piece, and I think it's not just for Pelosi. I think you have both sides really feeling like this is their chance to make good on what they've been working on for years and years and years. Part of that is because the people leading this fight on both sides are on the older side and might not have that many more years in power. But a part of it is also just not knowing when Democrats will have the control of the House, Senate, and White House again. That is pretty rare. And so they feel a ton of pressure to get done what they need to get done. And so on Pelosi's end, that's, you know, realizing the full vision of the Affordable Care Act as they originally conceived it. You know, originally Obamacare was supposed to have, you know, Medicaid expansion across the country. That got gutted by the Supreme Court. They're now trying to bring that back. They're trying to make the subsidies a lot more generous because at the time they had to make all these compromises to keep the cost of the bill down, you know, which is happening again now. It's like never ending. And meanwhile, on progressive side, you know, Bernie's been talking about Medicare for all for decades, just decades and decades. You know, he was sort of on the fringes of the party. You know, he would introduce these Medicare for all bills, would not get very many co-sponsors at all. Now you have, you know, tons of people co-sponsoring his bill. A couple years ago, you have a lot of the Democratic primary for president being focused on debating Medicare for all. He's really just ascended on this idea. And even though what's being debated now is way less than Medicare for all, it is a small expansion of benefits for people on Medicare. But if you look at the history of Medicare, they haven't added benefits that many times. So it would be historic in that way. And it would be a way for them to say, we're taking this first step on the long road to Medicare for All, which I think is, you know, at the very least what progressives want to be able to say, rather than just we caved and gave more subsidies to private insurance.
What about the 2022 elections? How much of this, what Pelosi is pushing for in terms of shoring up Obamacare, has to deal with the likelihood that Republicans will flip this chamber in just, you know, next fall, in a year? Traditionally, the party in power loses 24 House seats in the midterm elections, which means, you know, Pelosi is looking at losing her gavel since she only has a 3-seat majority right now. Do we know what Republicans would do if Obamacare is not shored up and they end up flipping the chamber like a lot of people think they will?
Yeah, so that's a huge piece of this, and it's why there's a lot of pressure to at least extend the Obamacare subsidies, if not make them permanent, which is what Pelosi and her allies want, because they're now set to expire around the midterms. And so if Democrats are not in power after that, you could see millions of people losing these subsidies, having more trouble affording some of these plans. And so that's a huge consideration there. But it's also, you know, what can they pass that would make a strong argument to take to voters to say, you need to keep us in power because you gave us control of Washington, House, Senate, and White House for the first time in a really long time. And Democrats feel that if they're not able to really show anything for that, anything concrete, you know, if people are not feeling these policies, they will not see a political benefit. So I think it's both a consideration of how do we ensure that these programs won't get messed with by a future Republican majority, but also what can we pass so that there is no future Republican majority, so that we have a strong political argument to make. And we've seen healthcare be such a big piece of the last several elections, and Democrats make so many promises, and I think they feel a ton of pressure to deliver right now.
As you recently wrote, the bulk of Joe Biden's domestic agenda really hangs on the balance of how this plays out. I mean, what does this mean for Biden's own legacy and for his own reelection prospects if they're able to work this out and get a compromise, or if it falls through?
Yeah, I think that's also a big piece of it. You know, Biden ran on a healthcare argument. You know, a lot of it was a COVID argument, so there's obviously a lot of pressure there. And that is, you know, currently a big struggle for the White House, as you and others have reported. But I think on the health policy piece, you know, Biden really campaigned on a public option, and we're not hearing about that at all anymore. And so I think, just like Democrats in Congress, there's a lot of pressure on the administration to deliver like real meaningful healthcare reforms that individual people can really feel, whether that's it lowers their insurance premiums that they have to pay, or when they go to the pharmacy, the drugs are cheaper. It just can't be theoretical. And I think the Medicaid piece would be a really big piece of that. You know, a lot of the states that haven't expanded Medicaid are really important swing states. You know, you've got Wisconsin, North Carolina, et cetera. And if millions of people in those states who had no health insurance are able to get health insurance, you know, that's a strong piece as well.
What do you think is the biggest piece of all this that people don't really understand or that get wrong about this healthcare battle?
So something that I focus on a lot is the drug price reform piece of it, because that is going to generate. So first of all, they're hoping that it actually lowers the cost of drugs for regular people, but also Democrats are depending on that to raise the money to pay for a lot of the other health pieces. And that has not been resolved yet. There's fights over it in the House. There's fights over it in the Senate. And everything else is sort of monopoly money until we know what we're actually working with in terms of how aggressive they're going to be on the drug industry and how much money they can extract from that they're going to be able to use to pay for other stuff.
So basically, they're fighting over which policy ideas should be prioritized when they don't even know what the total amount of money they have to work with is. Is that right?
Exactly. So, you know, an aide compared it to having dessert before dinner, you know, having dessert before your broccoli. You're planning on how to spend your allowance before you know how much allowance you're getting.
Yeah. Wow.
So I've been really in the policy weeds on this, listening to the committee markups and whatnot. So, you know, I'd love to hear a little bit more of the higher level political dynamics that you've been tracking on the Hill.
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely a clash of, you know, the political titans here, a clash of the oldies. And I'm really curious how it's going to play out, because from covering Pelosi for 10 years now, she doesn't lose. And she often is the one setting the priorities. She's the one saying how they're going to, you know, what bills they're going to pass, you know, what are the provisions in these massive packages. And right now she's up against Bernie. She's up against the White House. She's up against Schumer, who is typically her ally. And it's going to be really a test of her power here. I mean, she's obviously in legacy mode. She's going to be retiring in a couple of years. And she sees shoring up Obamacare as one of the final things she wants to do before she leaves Washington. And so she's going to be fighting for this tooth and nail. But then you have Bernie, who has this power that he has garnered from running for president. He is a, you know, progressive darling, very famous on the left right now. The party's moving in that direction. So he has this new power that he has never really had. He had always been seen as like this gadfly in the Congress, somebody that lawmakers sort of scoffed at and laughed at. But now he's got this celebrity status. And so he can very easily drum up the left to put pressure on Pelosi. And this is a new dynamic for her. You know, how does she handle this? And I think it's going to be, you know, the battle to watch, given the conventional wisdom that she just doesn't lose. And she typically gets what she wants. So we'll have to see if Bernie is able to really change that here in the next few weeks.
And something I think, you know, can't be emphasized enough is just how many lawmakers up on the Hill, you know, Pelosi top among them, just feel so tied to the Affordable Care Act. It is their baby. They have seen it almost die and be reborn many times. And they just feel so invested in making sure it can last into the future, whether they're in power or not. And they see attempts to redirect funding to other things as somewhat of a threat to that. And they get their backup and they want to protect their baby. And meanwhile, progressives always saw the Affordable Care Act as something they sort of settled for. It was not their preference. You know, it pours lots and lots of government money into private insurance plans, which was not what they wanted then or what they want now. And so they don't feel that same attachment and identification with it. It's not as core to their identity or core to their identity really at all. They are agreeing. They're saying, you know, we're fine, you know, giving it some more subsidies, but not at the expense of this Medicare stuff that we care way more about.
Yeah, it really is. It's a battle over the future of the Democratic Party in a lot of ways. I mean, like, the party's been moving left for, you know, several years now. And, you know, Pelosi, she had her speakership before she lost it because, you know, in her view, they moved too far left. That was more of a Obamacare was part of it at the time. Also, right. Votes on climate that were very controversial, but favored by the left at the time. Mm-hmm. And I think Pelosi, as a speaker, she is concerned about the direction of the party. I think that was pretty clear when in the 2020 primaries, she was outwardly warning people like Bernie about Medicare for All and mm-hmm. saying, you know, these are policies that don't resonate with a lot of Americans and could blow back on the party. And so I think you have, you know, traditional Democrats, and Pelosi's, she's no moderate, right? She's from San Francisco. She's been the liberal boogeyman for Republicans for years. But she sort of views that direction of the party, the Medicare for All direction of the party, as problematic for them long term if they want to keep power, that this won't resonate in swing districts. But then, you know, the party really is heading in a direction away from her right now, with Bernie becoming very popular, Medicare for All growing in terms of support with Democrats, and this whole healthcare battle. It's just interesting to see. It's like one example of where the party is just sort of debating how far left do they move, how far left can they move with keeping majorities. And it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out in the coming weeks.
I really think the COVID pandemic has been kind of a Rorschach test for all of this, because each side is able to point to the pandemic to support their arguments. The Pelosi pro-Obamacare side says, hey, look, during the pandemic, the number of uninsured people did not go up by that much, even though millions of people lost their jobs and their health insurance through their jobs because of Obamacare and Obamacare's Medicaid expansion. Look, we made a safety net and the safety net worked. Whereas you have the progressives saying, hey, COVID really shone a light on the fact that, unlike most other developed nations, we have this, you know, Frankenstein public-private health system where a bunch of people can't afford to go to the doctor when they need to. And so it's really sort of pushed both into their corners and made them double down on their, you know, pre-existing views.
Alice, thanks for being here. Good luck on the Hill.
Thanks, anytime.
And that's our show. Our producers are Adrian Hurst and Annie Reese. Our senior producers are Raghu Manavolan and Jenny Ahmed. And our executive producer is Irene Noguchi. Mike Zabler is Playbook's daily newsletter editor. Our music is by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. If you like what you hear, subscribe, rate, and review us wherever you listen. And before you go, two quick things. I want to tell you about a new podcast Politico just launched called Global Insider. In the first episode, host Ryan Heath gets real with the U.S. ambassador to the U.N., Linda Thomas Greenfield, just days after the Taliban took over Kabul. Again, that's Global Insider from Politico. Subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. I also want to invite you to take our new listener survey. It helps us learn more about your interests and improves our content. What do you want to hear from Politico's podcasts? Let us know at politico.com/podsurvey. That's politico.com/podsurvey. I'm Rachel Bade. See you next week, where we'll take you behind the scenes of Capitol Hill on another Playbook deep dive. Thanks for listening. Oh, and one more thing. Alice has a few questions. Alice, take it away.
Hi, Chairman Sanders. Alice here. Just in case you're listening, I would love to know, what health items would be on the chopping block from the reconciliation bill if the overall bill gets shrunk down from $3.5 trillion? Also, are there any health provisions that could get nixed by the parliamentarian? Maybe some of the ones for lowering drug prices? Please let me know. I'm at aolstein@politico.com. Thanks so much.